gets colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused.
Good afternoon. This is Evelyn Pringle. Welcome to Focus on the Facts. My guest today is George Webb, an investigative researcher and journalist. His open source investigation of the Clinton Foundation has created a real buzz in the community of Americans who are horrified to learn that the Pizzagate investigation is a much bigger issue than the perverts and pedophiles of Comet Ping Pong Pizza in Washington, D.C. George began his investigation of the Clinton Foundation by following the money because the former CEO of the foundation said to follow the money. So George went looking for rat lines, which are set up in countries alongside oil pipelines and are used to traffic arms and drugs. But not too far into the investigation, he discovered that the rat lines were also being used for child sex trafficking and organ harvesting. They make more money off of child trafficking and organ harvesting than they do off the drugs and the arms trafficking. These rat lines are set up in every country that the U.S. goes to war against. The Clinton Foundation, the CIA, and DynCorp are running these rat lines in Libya, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Haiti, and many more other countries, including the United States. George has created a video series on his YouTube channel that gives the details of his investigation on a daily basis. I've posted his series on my Facebook page so listeners can review his research. George has also now uncovered a major spying ring in Washington, run by the Alwan brothers. But I'll let him explain all that to you. I'll bring him on now and have him give us the latest news from his investigation. Hi, George.
Hey, Evelyn, how are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm glad to have you on the line. I mean, every time we try to do this show, something happens to the phone lines, and it's awful. You know, and this is happening all over. I mean, yesterday I was listening to an interview of a person and he talked about all the what was going on in Syria and all the war information, stuff like that. And at the end, when they asked him to comment on the Pizzagate investigation, they interfered with the phones immediately when he started talking about that. So anyways, yeah. I'm so thankful to finally have you on. So
well, yeah.
Where do you want to start, George?
Go ahead.
I said, where do you want to start?
Well, with where I am, I guess, would be the first thing. I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, heading move to some of these different locations that these Alwan brothers, these kind of four Pakistani brothers who were involved in top secret access into our most sensitive House Congressional Committee. So that's kind of where what I'm following up on today. And so, yeah, it's exciting, you know, here in Washington, D.C. I just visited NSA and talked to all my friends out at Fort Meade and looked at how they're combining all the satellite information from the NGA. So we've got the NSA, we got the NGA, and now we got downtown D.C.
Okay. Yeah, I was watching your videos. You were up in Canada the last few days.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of following some rat lines that have worked for a long time. The original rat lines came in through Canada. This goes all the way back to the beginning of the CIA. And typically what the CIA does is they like to work things out in Canada and then infiltrate into the U.S. because they have a little bit more free movement there in terms of immigration and so forth with operatives. So, yeah, running down a few rat lines. They're mainly the drug business there. Yeah, and then just kind of followed the rat line straight down from Montreal. Montreal is kind of like the Marseille of Canada, and kind of followed it straight down through New York, through Springfield, Massachusetts, Springfield, Connecticut, into New York, and now through Long Island, and now here to through Baltimore, and now here in D.C.
Okay, and so we're talking about rat lines in the United States, where they are doing the same thing that they have been doing in all these other countries with the child trafficking, the organ harvesting, and the drug running into the U.S.
Yeah.
And that's what you've uncovered,
originally,
right?
Yeah, originally a lot of these experiments the CIA did were in Montreal. And, you know, they did a lot of drug experiments and truth serum type stuff. And but there also was, because of that, they did a lot of experiments on children. And this is, goes back to a guy named Sidney Gottlieb at McGill University. Well, the problem with experimenting on children is a lot of parents don't like to have their children experimented on. So you need to find orphans. So in the Montreal case, in the Sidney Gottlieb case, in the MK Ultra and MK Search, they found orphans through the church. They found orphans through the Catholic Church, and primarily to fund these experiments. And then the experiments again kind of moved down from there to, you know, about 22 different American universities. And then I think around 50 or 60 different mental hospitals and so forth. This is the 60s and 70s. But right at the same time, the rat line for drugs was established by Lucky Luciano and bringing in heroin from Turkey.
Right. And so how are they bringing that in now? The heroin?
Well,
okay.
The Luciano was kind of a clever guy. He used oranges and wax oranges. And what they do is they put real oranges on the outside, put the wax oranges on the inside, fill them up with heroin. And the real oranges give off this smell called limonene, the lemon smell, kind of the citrusy smell that you smell when you cut an open an orange. And that throws the dogs off. That throws the dogs off. So makes it hard for them to smell. The other one that is interesting is the rice business. There's this basmati rice bag. It's a very sweet-smelling rice burlap bag that also can throw off the dogs as well. So the rice business has always been a really good business for the drug rat line, for especially heroin.
How do they sneak it in with rice?
Well, I think they actually have a machine that can form it into something that looks like rice. The other way is a secret compartment inside, you know, a bag inside a bag, that type of idea for less sophisticated ones. You'd be surprised, you know, you look at, you know, let's just take mangoes flying directly from Pakistan to Chicago O'Hare Airport. They're selling for $6 a piece. They come in a box of six, so even though you could get mangoes at the store for a dollar or two, if you would, let's say a box for $36 for six mangoes, it's $3 3 pounds. Well, that same box in heroin, if it's heroin mangoes, is $28,800. So it's, if you can build a business on $36 box of Pakistani mangoes, you can build a business on $28,800 boxes of mangoes.
Right.
And the same thing is true for rice, or, you know, a lot of fruit is used often. Luciano used oranges, but there has been bananas. The current president of Haiti has a banana plantation with fake wax bananas that he fills with heroin to ship all over the world. So it doesn't matter what fruit. It's usually, because fruit has to be cleared quickly, it has been a use of choice. So next time you look at your wax banana, your wax fruit bowl on your table, check it for heroin.
Right.
It may be worth a lot more money than you think.
Right. And it's flying right into Chicago, huh?
Yeah, and they're supposed to be irradiated. Now, Hillary worked for 2 years on this. And there was a this, they called it the Mango Mission. The Mango Mission with Pakistan. Some people called it Mango Madness. Some people called it Mango Diplomacy. They think somewhere between 200 and 300 diplomats on each side worked on this for 2 years, working this mango thing out. And you would think, gosh, that sounds pretty simple, you know. Here's the form, fill it out, you know, come in and clear customs. But what actually was happening was that the mango business, which is, I believe, the drug business, was coming through India, Indian mangoes. And so in 2011 is when that kind of that trade opened up. And you can see many emails that Hillary writes talking about mangoes the day that they started landing at O'Hare Airport, right around June 29th, 2011, if you want to check your WikiLeaks.
Right. And so WikiLeaks put this out too, huh?
Yeah, it's in there a lot. There's also other ones where she talks about fresh products. So fresh mm-hmm. products is another euphemism for fruit. And turns out the Awan brothers, you know, they have, now these are, to give people a background on who they are, is they're congressional staffers now working for 20 different members of Congress. But the funny thing is they're all making three times as much as the normal congressional staffer, and that's odd. When you are not a U.S. citizen, it's odd to get a job on Capitol Hill as a congressional staffer if you're not a U.S. citizen. But even more odd to make three times higher salary than everyone else on the Hill. They make the Warren brothers were making as much as a congressman maximum of $160,000 a year. That's not where the anomaly stopped. They also had 30 different companies that they were involved in that they created. Car companies, housing companies, there's rice importation companies, pharmaceutical companies for animal pharmaceuticals, transportation companies, companies that provided visas, companies that provided overseas employment, trucking companies that specialized in fresh produce. So it just doesn't, you know, if you're an investigator, it just doesn't look. Normally, congressional staffers don't have that many companies involved in over import export from Pakistan.
Right. Well, are they closing in on these places that are trafficking these drugs? Like what about that fruit company or whatever down in? Geez, I forget where it was, where they blew up all these trucks and then the warehouse and stuff. Was that involved in this?
Oh yeah. That's American Produce, American Fruit and Produce, I believe it is. Yeah, so that's a different set of brothers. That's the Costa brothers, COSTA, the Costa brothers. Costa brothers involved in importation. You might have heard me talk about Moise, the guy who is the president of Haiti. One of the places he shipped to, I believe, was American Fruit and Produce with his famous bananas. And the American Fruit and Produce all dealt extensively in all sorts of fruit, but especially mangoes from not only Haiti, but Mexico, Central America, I believe Peru, and then also Pakistan. And again, in the WikiLeaks, you see mangoes from Haiti being in the WikiLeaks. And they actually hired a reporter who did an article on it called Haiti Economic Recovery. One mango at a time, and then they fired that guy. So it's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, it's real funny. So they blew up that. Warehouse and everything. What did they write that off to? What did they say started those fires? I mean, right when it happened, I said on Facebook that I bet any money this was one of those drug dealing places.
Well, normally in refrigerated warehouse, you have to have something go pretty wrong. You know, like. They said maybe somebody was welding or something like that. But you'd have to go in a controlled environment like that. You'd have to, where you've got air circulating all the time, you're not going to get a buildup of gases like you would in a, you know, in an enclosed area that didn't have ventilation. But the other odd thing about the fire was, the explosion was that it was almost like a bomb hit the thing, the warehouse, and 33 semi-trucks were also destroyed outside.
Really?
Normally, when there's a fire or an explosion, you get in your truck and you move the truck. You don't have the truck sit there and explode. But this, you know, and 30, normally an explosion usually occurs in one area. It doesn't occur over a very large area to explode and blow up 33 different semi-trailers.
Right. Now, when they investigated that, or did they investigate it? I mean, wouldn't those trucks have been full of dope?
Well, we don't know what they were full of. We don't know what was going on, but they were served with a bankruptcy notice, I believe, or a bill to either pay or move, kind of one of those sheriff's kind of ultimatums. about a week before that. And one of the things you find a lot in the drug business is that people will run credit as long as they can, run up a bill as big as they can, and then just collapse the business. There is no, I mean, even though the profits are outrageous, there is no honor among thieves. They'll just go ahead and collapse the business and leave everybody holding the bag. And the Owan brothers were just classic at that. It seemed to do that every, it was almost like on a clockwork. Every 14 months, all these companies would automatically dissolve. He'd build it into the charter of the company to automatically dissolve after 14 months. And oddly, they ordered rice shipments every 14 months to coincide with the company's collapsing.
Really? Oh.
Just odd timing.
Right. So how are they peddling these drugs in the U.S.? Once they get them here, how are they spreading those drugs around to everybody in the U.S.?
Well, there used to be the old method, which was, you know, rat lines, you know, the Hells Angels or other motorcycle gangs would, you know, kind of enforce the network and then enforce the movement. And then usually they prey upon immigrants to do the actual, you know, running of the drugs and in poor neighborhoods and so forth. But like San Bernardino being one of the key areas, like I think it's home to three motorcycle gangs in the U.S. for the Southwest. And then through the
So they hire these motorcycle gangs to do this?
They're not hired. They're paid indirectly through several different methods. You can get people on government programs. You can get them Social Security disability. You can make them. You can hire them through Department of Homeland Security as private security contractors. That's probably the favorite way is hiring DHS, hiring them as a private security contractor.
So the CIA is involved in this, right?
CIA doesn't like going to Congress. What's that?
I said, so they're drugging Americans since day one, the CIA.
Yeah, Lucky Luciano, a guy named Frank Helliwell is his name, H-E-L-L-I-W-E-L-L, was the original architect of the plan to bring Turkish heroin in through New York, New Orleans, et cetera, and Montreal. So, and the problem with the CIA has a problem with going to Congress. They're supposed to file what they call a finding, F-I-N-D-I-N-G, and that it goes to the Gang of Eight, you know, four in the Congress, four in the Senate. And then usually if it's a serious operation, it goes to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, and it also goes to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence for kind of approval, as well as the president. But that requires paperwork, that requires approvals, that requires an audit trail, and those are the natural protections that were put in by Congress from the Church Committee when they had kind of a cleaning house of the CIA in 1976. So the two ways around that, two easy ways around actually having to do that is, one, fund your operations through drug operations, and you'll never have to go to Congress. The other one is doing what they call a liaison operation. A liaison operation says if I go through MI6 in Britain, or if I go through ISI intelligence in Pakistan, I don't have to report anything. It's really their operation, not really mine, even though they're doing operations for us. So in the Owan brothers' case, they could go ahead and spy on everybody in Congress, do wiretaps on all the federal judges, do wiretaps on Trump and his associates, do wiretaps on everybody, read their mail, watch, follow them with satellites, NGA satellites, whatever they like, because it's a liaison operation. So, and I believe this whole spying thing, the whole Trump thing, is all a liaison operation, just like Libya was a liaison operation. That's why Hillary didn't have to report any of that. And it's a huge loophole. It's called the liaison loophole. And the other one is obviously just using drugs to fund operations. And that's been going on since not only the Luciano oranges, but you've also got the, you know, Iran-Contra, and then you got the whole, Mujahideen in almost every conflict since 1979 has been funded by drugs.
Wow. So just turning all Americans into addicts in with the drugs they're running from these countries that they take us to war against.
Yeah, and the really, if you're an investor, the exciting part of the drug business is the legal drug business. That's the real growth part of the industry because, you know, the OxyContin and all those derivatives, the fentanyls and the carfentanyls and all these different exotic derivatives of opium and heroin are actually much better suboxone. They're much better because there's a much more consistent revenue stream from the addict. Rather than, you know, if you're just working the street all the time, you never know if somebody's going to show, you don't know what you're going to get in terms of money, purity, et cetera. Getting people into the drug rehabilitation is a dream come true for a drug company.
So they got a lot of the drugs prescribing these drugs on purpose, right?
Oh, absolutely. I just came from Detroit where we looked at four or five doctors that were not only prescribing illegal drugs, but also actually giving people cancer by giving them carcinogens when they knew they were healthy. And so there was there's a Dr. Ayed, Ataya, I'm sorry, I have to go to my series to watch it, but there was, I think, seven suboxone or methadone, ODs in a very short space of time. And then he becomes the doctor that's involved in the largest Medicaid fraud ever last year in the Detroit area. In that same Detroit area, there's this Dr. Fatah, F-A-T-A, and he is involved in killing over 100 people through inducing cancer. So there's this kind of Pakistanian doctor community that's fantastic, and we love them, and we thank them for being in America, but then there's this segment that adheres to this cleric, Gulen, G-U-L-E-N, Gulen, that seems to have a revenge motive against the U.S., seems to have a revenge motive of it, especially against U.S. families that were involved in the armed services. So you put these two things together, you put this kind of revenge motive and then people prescribing these drugs and trying to get people on drug programs, and you combine that with people like the Awans who have access to all the family members' names. There's Social Security numbers, what VA hospital they go to, their insurance programs, their doctors' names. It's a bad combination. You don't want to be giving people who have cited you, and then the Awans on their Facebook have talked about radical jihad and so forth. You don't want to give people who are radical jihadists all your personal information. It's dangerous. So that's why I'm doing the story I'm doing.
So you think they're targeting some of our veterans, our troops?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There was a hack of everyone knows about the big showy stuff, the PR stuff, the Fort Hood type stuff. But what I'm talking about is a much more insidious, slow death type campaign across a large section of the population, and it's mainly through targeting youth with opioid overdose. It's also targeting older folks with long-term suboxone type programs.
Right.
So targeting some youth for the organ harvest, because there's
right.
nothing like a 21-year-old sprinter's heart, especially if you're
really?
You know 80 years old, you know, like, you know, Rockefeller.
Right. So yeah, swing into that. The organ harvesting goes right along with this, right? The drugs and the organ
yeah.
harvesting and the child trafficking, right along the same rat lines as you're describing, they're doing the drugs.
Absolutely. It's almost you couldn't push them together if you wanted to closer. I mean, in Chicago, I reported on Holman Square, where There's all these disappearances. People are not given access to their attorney. They disappear off the street. And then the next day, there's four transplants done at a local Chicago hospital, right next to a casino, next to a biorecovery center. So basically, the biorecovery center in Des Plaines, Illinois, BRC, pays $5,000 a body, no questions asked. So you take your money that you get, your cash, you go right over to the casino, you turn it into chips, and then back to cash. One of the oldest money laundering tricks in the book. And away you go, no questions asked. So these bodies are coming from everywhere. Now, if you're in a gang and you know you shoot an opposite gang member, you get $5,000, you know, that's quick money. So that's what's happening in Chicago right now, and it's just really a bad situation.
Right. Did you say in one of your videos how many prisoners have just went missing from that home and square in Chicago? Did you talk about that?
Yeah, Spencer Ackerman of the Daily Mail, Daily Mail. I believe he's out of New York, but it's a UK paper. He reported that there was something like 10,000 people tortured over 12 years at Holman Square. I think the number is much, much higher as far as disappearances. Those are people who just live to tell the story, who, for whatever reason, they couldn't have a big enough case made against them to be, to be disappeared. But again, no cameras inside the facility, no habeas corpus, no right to an attorney, no amendment protections. It's a secret prison. It's a secret prison right in the United States of America. It's Guantanamo right in the middle of the United States of America. All the human rights advocates, I've spoken to a lot of the human rights advocates in Chicago, completely ignored. Civil rights advocates completely ignored. So, it's an amazing thing that's happening right now in the middle of America.
Right, and this was reported on, I think the Daily Mail reported on Holman Square probably several years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, Spencer Ackerman is the guy, and he's had several follow-ups. I saw him as recently as last year. He had a follow-up, and we're talking about, torture and so forth. We're not talking about, a bright light, in interrogation rooms. We're talking about use of tasers. And so forth. And I wouldn't be surprised if waterboarding and everything else, just those people die and they become organ donors, you never hear about them.
Right. And then they're just killing them off. And when they go in there, a lot of people, like you said, don't get to call their attorneys, their families, or nothing. So these people go in there and they disappear and nobody even know they went there to begin with.
Yeah, there's something like 250,000, inner city youth that are missing in the United States. 50, like, we don't know where they are. Yeah, 250,000. Yeah. No, over the whole country. I think Chicago is the highest, though. It's around 50,000 missing. Now, there's different estimates on the low side, high side, but even 5 would seem a lot, in the day of the internet. All these cameras, cell phones, Facebook, you would think even if 5 people were missing, that would be. But again, you go to neighborhoods where people aren't being missed, and that's your source.
Sure, and even when they are missed, it's not reported they ever went there, so most people probably wouldn't even think of that they could have ended up there. But if they go there, they're not going to tell them that they're there, are they? Family members said, go down to Holman Square.
No. The DHS, and people don't realize this about DHS since 2001, but there was a similar system that the CIA set up in Mexico first for Carlos Slim called DFS. Same exact thing. I mean, they only changed two letters. They only changed one letter to two spaces. But it basically was the same idea. Go pick out who you want to target for assets, figure out some reason for asset seizure, pick your winners, pick your losers, gradually accumulate massive amounts of wealth, and take over key industries. And that's what happened with Carlos Slim. And that's the same exact thing that's happening right now with Department of Homeland Security through fusion centers. There's 50 fusion centers. This is exactly what they did in Mexico, by the way, exactly what they did in Vietnam, the Phoenix program. They basically put a fusion center in every...
Fusion centers
is where it's basically where if you're going to attack a population using information, you bring all the information together, you fuse it together. That's where the name comes from. So you got state, local, police, all the federal agencies, 18 different intelligence agencies, IRS, and then all your local tip lines, so your 1-800-TIPS, you know, your neighborhood associations. There's a program called InfraGuard, which is people that have been trained in the Protecting American Infrastructure. And it all sounds good. So these are people working in the utilities business and, you know, police, fire, paramedic, that sort of thing. As well as there's a volunteer program. So anybody walking off the street can add information to this. But that's all well and good if it's focused on terrorism. The problem since 2001, since the inception, it has been what the CIA has done in other countries, which is use it to pick winners and losers for Wall Street in that country. And it's no different in the United States. The CIA created DHS. If you want to read George Tenet's memo and the 22 pages that were missing from the Saudi 9/11 report, it's right in there. It says we need to create a DHS, we need to create fusion centers, and we need local tip lines. You know, it's just straight out of what they did in Mexico. And it's a way of picking winners and losers. And the Fortune 500, half of the Fortune 500 fund these fusion centers. So if I want to have, kind of like Rockefeller and his Pinkertons, if I want to have my Pinkertons go out and take out my competition, I give a contribution to the fusion centers. And then if I have a whistleblower or something comes up, I grind that person into dust, and I move on. And that is what our fusion centers have been used for since day one. There's a no-fly list we have in America, which is about 50 to 60,000 people. It's a small list that most people are familiar with, but there's a much larger list of about 3 million people called the terrorism watch list. And most of the people on there are economic targets or journalists who are whistleblowers.
Like me and you, don't you think we rate up there on that list?
I'm on that list.
Don't you think you and I rate up there on that list?
Oh, yeah, you're on there too, Asa. I don't think you're getting away. It's a funnel. See, as you move down, it gets worse, okay? So you don't want to be down toward the bottom where I am, yeah. But no. So it's a funnel, and it's been used in 140 different countries, and the U.S. is no different. They just call it something different. CIA just calls itself DHS in the United States, but it's the same thing. The Chertoffs and the people who set up the system are, I can assure you, right out of, you know, CIA central casting.
Right. This got busted before when they were running drugs into this country, and that didn't stop it, right? This went full speed ahead to where it is now. It's absolutely horrible.
Well, you know, they always say the way you stop a criminal cartel is you don't go after interdiction. Interdiction is the worst form of crime solving because there's incredible creativity among all the different ways I can transport the material. Where you go is you go after the money, and everyone knows that Gulen, that guy I met before, G-U-L-E-N, the cleric, the secretive cleric who lives in Sailorsburg, Pennsylvania, in a kind of a compound. He's done these what they call soft coups, where you take down the population through drugs. He's done these soft coups, and he's got all over Central Asia. Was called Gladio B. And he's in 140 countries now doing it for the CIA. So he's doing that in the U.S. As well. He has $43 billion in Malaysian banks, in Kuala Lumpur and other Malaysian banks. We know where the money is. The FBI knows where the money is. The number two guy at the FBI runs the counterterrorism division, Andrew McCabe, knows where the money is. Everybody knows where the money is. Everyone knows they could turn in warrants tomorrow if they wanted. The money laundering network is 33 years old. It goes all the way back to Mark Rich from Bill Clinton fame, BCCI fame. And James Comey has been sitting on papers from BCCI for 33 years. So everyone in the FBI knows where the money is and can stop it tomorrow if they wanted to. But they just kind of choose to look the other way.
Sure. So while everybody's looking the other way, while we've been attacking all these countries, and everything, and setting up these rat lines, here it's been in the United States all along. It's going on right here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I started this series 166 days ago, and I wanted to do a World Bank story on Eric Braverman. I wanted to do a World Bank, you know, setting up investments in countries to set up, like, water lines and pipelines and things that are good for the country and roads and so forth. But it's actually a cover for the oil industry. So I wanted to do an oil story about Dick Cheney and Syria and Genie Energy and them wanting to take the Golan Heights and with Larry Summers and, you know, the Rothschild. I wanted to do an oil story. And then it morphed into this oil for arms, and then it was oil for drugs, and then it was oil for kids. And then it turned out to be oil for organs. And so it really has been a journey here in this 169 days. And it continues today as I go and talk to people who, these Juans, these brothers, you know, they've got all kinds of guns and army paraphernalia on their websites, radical jihad. They went over to their stepmother's house and threatened her to kill her, kidnap her relatives, kill her relatives in Pakistan. These are three guys that are congressional staffers now threatening to kill the stepmother if she didn't change her inheritance over to them, because their father was dying. So these are not your normal typical congressional staffer that you see sitting in back of your congressman when they're testifying at, you know, one of the committees. Folks that know, that have a lot of weapons on their website, a lot of pictures of jihad and machine guns, and a lot of radical Islamic clerics on their website. And what's amazing is this story has only been covered by a very few outlets. Fox has covered it a little bit, but not really very many. Daily Caller here in Washington has covered it. But it's kind of gone under the radar. One congressman, Louis Gohmert, has talked about it on the floor of the House, representative from Texas. But that's really about it. And normally, you don't have a situation where you have, you know, maybe five or six foreign nationals with a sworn revenge against the United States involved in all the top secret committees. That's a dangerous situation.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely, how they had access to all these computers. And then they went ahead and they stole their hard drives and things, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, when they hightailed it, the mother, the stepmother who was kidnapped in her house in Springfield, Virginia, eventually called the police. She was saying that the boys were tapping her cell phone, so they're hackers as well. They're very skilled hackers. And then the police came, and then they came and ransacked the house and then took off for Pakistan. Well, the other thing they did, though, is they did burglaries in 20 of the different congressional representatives' offices as well, took hard drives, took thumb drives, took laptops, and so forth. So the Capitol Police is investigating this. But for some reason, Andrew McCabe at the FBI, running the counterterrorism division and all that, has decided not to investigate this, just like he decided to try to shut down the Hillary server and the human server investigation. So we're still trying to figure out why the FBI is not involved in having four people with direct access with top secret clearance to our most sensitive information, security information.
Well, right, and these are the top intelligence committees of the Senate and Congress, right?
Yeah, you've seen Adam Schiff and you've seen Devin Nunes. That's the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. There is a subcommittee called the Emerging Threats Committee that Andre Carson is on. These folks work for Andre Carson. So not only would they have the top information in general, but they'd also have information about drone strikes, so they could give early warning and drone strike information. They'd also have early information about Navy SEAL operations, so when that Navy SEAL was killed, they could have warned the folks in Yemen that they were coming. The Navy SEALs certainly thought that someone had tipped off the enemy because they seemed very prepared to resist them. So, it's a dangerous situation to have your sworn enemies with top secret information, especially the Emerging Threats Committee, because they know you're coming before you get there. And it's really a danger to people in military situations because you want the element of surprise.
Right. Well, now this bit about attacking Syria, you know, and I keep saying that it's Trump protecting these rat lines, that, you know, that's where the money is, and that's what they're making all this money off of. So now they're going to go this route again of attacking Syria and committing genocide in this country, more of it that we've been doing since 2011, to protect these rat lines. And I was hearing you say that the ones to the north are for Hillary and the ones to the south are for McCain and who else? I forget who you said.
Graham. McCain and Graham. It looks
Graham.
That way. The operation originally was called Timber Sycamore. And Mazzetti of the New York Times, the Pulitzer Prize winner, broke that story. So It looks like Trump's just finishing off Timber Sycamore for McCain and Graham. And King Abdullah, if you remember, he was in Washington the day that they announced the first airstrike and the kind of the gas attack. He's where he took the gas. He took the Gaddafi's sarin gas. From Libya, from Hillary, and that was stored with King Abdullah in Jordan for the first, there was two gas attacks in 2013 in Turkey that were, the gas was provided by King Abdullah, but then there was also 52 gas attacks in Iraq that the ISIS used. And that was reported also by the New York Times, and I'm forgetting the name of the reporter right off the top of my head. It's not Mazzetti, but it's the other guy who's a Pulitzer Prize winner. It's not James Risen either, but Abdullah has provided the gas for 54 attacks, and now this attack is going to be different. I just find that hard to believe.
Right. God, this whole subject is so complex, and I said, you know, if I wouldn't have watched your videos from day one, I couldn't have kept up with it. You know, it is, you are doing such a great job. You are doing the world a great job. You know, but this bit of why this isn't the biggest story in the hearings in Congress is beyond me.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those embarrassments that when this thing breaks, it's going to make, you know, Watergate look like a very, very small flip in American history. I mean, this is really everything. This is all 31 members at least of the Democratic Congress, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Jackie Speier, Saul Wall of California, Becerra from California, Meeks from New York. I mean, it's going to take a whole bunch of people out, but then there's a whole bunch of collateral damage as well, because there have been people who've been complicit, like the FBI and so forth. So it really is kind of a massive scandal. So we'll see where it goes, you know. There was a journalist named Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T, and he had a great comment. It's like, why do you find all these stories? Are you a great journalist? He goes, no, it's amazing what stories you find if you actually look.
Right.
You know, just look. You know, there, it's going on right under your nose, you know.
Right. Now, when you said other journalists published some stories on this and everything, did they describe the rat line in the rat line with the child trafficking and the organ harvesting stuff, or did they put that in their articles?
No. That's all mine.
No.
I've just added and added. And the folks, the Pizzagate folks, were contacting me constantly. I said, I don't have any interest in this story whatsoever. I don't want to talk about it. And they finally just convinced me through kind of a tidal wave of evidence. And I finally said, okay, I'll cover it. And then when they did, I started seeing all the rat lines in Syria. And there are some great journalists, Ava Bartlett in Canada, from the UK, Vanessa Bealey, who started reporting that they're using the people at Aleppo and different Idlib and so forth as human shields. Parents upstairs, kids downstairs, and then when the shells would hit and kill the parents and the kids become orphans, that's when they would get shuffled off to UAE or Bahrain or Qatar or one of the other Arab sheikhdoms to be sold as brides. So, that is a whole white helmets fraud. And that really changed things for me, because then these are legitimate, these are very well-known journalists in Canada and England who are reporting the story. And I picked up the story from there and just started following all the different rat lines where it was happening. Similar thing with the organ harvesting. It starts all the way back in Kosovo in 1993, and it's just the same Mujahideen that just keep getting moved everywhere that do the organ harvesting. It's these same UN peacekeeping troops through DynCorp that just... That's all they do. It's like a traveling circus. Only they do organ harvesting. It's quite remarkable, actually.
Sure. How about the UN? Is it involved in this?
Completely complicit. If you say U.S. peacekeeping forces, you may as well just say DynCorp, and then you may as well just say, look at their track record. I mean, look at their track record in Bosnia, Kosovo, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Colombia, El Salvador. It's a laundry list. It's almost like a Chinese menu. Okay, when do we start the child trafficking? When do we start the drugs? When do we start the organ harvesting? When do we start this forced labor and mining? And then if we have time... we do the oil. Oil is almost like last on the list now.
Yeah. You know? They're making more money off of these other crimes. And, you know, it just gets worse and worse. I was telling a friend the other day, you know, when I was hearing all this and everything, you know, then hearing about this child trafficking and how rampant it is in the United States, too, and then hearing how, you know, they rape and sodomize and murder these kids, and then going on from there, following you along, then how they steal their organs. Dude, how much more evil crimes could our government officials be involved in this country?
Well, you know, the thing that really changed was Kosovo. Kosovo in 1999 really changed the dynamics, because there you had a trained population of surgeons in these Turkish surgeons. And now your population, which was Serbian prisoners at that time, it was hot organs ready to go, hot and ready to go. And they just set records in terms of kidneys in Turkey. And then from then on, it's been hearts in Haiti and livers and so forth. So it's and then the bone marrow is even worth even more now. And that can be harvested up to 17 days after you're dead. So the opportunities are endless. If I was an investor at a conference, the first thing I would talk about would be the organ harvest, because it so outscales everything else in terms of just cash. And you have to train the doctors, though. So there's rat lines to all these, there's footprints to all these rat lines. And organ harvesting leaves the biggest footprint. That's the good thing. Because you got missing people, and the missing people have friends. And, you know, that's the nice part about following the organ harvesting rat lines. It's the easiest one to follow.
What hospitals and stuff are involved in this? What are the main ones?
Well, you got Mayo Clinic in Abu Dhabi. You've got Cleveland Clinic in Dubai. I might have those backwards, but UAE, it mainly happens in the UAE. Now, the doctors train here. So, I'm looking at Jacksonville right now in Florida with Mayo Clinic, and I'm looking at Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland as major training centers. There's also seems to be quite a bit of biorecovery in the Florida area through a company called BioFlorida. I can't remember the name right now of the Medishare hospitals through the University of Miami. So that's where a lot of the training is concerned. And then Partners in Health, Paul Farmer, does a lot of the training as well in terms of extraction. I don't necessarily think in terms of the actual, performing the final surgery, the end surgery, but in terms of extraction, I think Paul Farmer and Partners in Health does a lot of that. A lot of the white helmet activity you're going to find around Médecins Sans Frontières, wherever Médecins Sans Frontières is, Doctors Without Borders.
Right.
And the guy Klein is seems to be involved in organ harvesting there. And they basically look like you're a prisoner, so you deserve it. So this is fair game.
Yeah, and all these children deserve what they get too, huh?
Well, you know, and that's where you get the dodge there is, well, you know, it's Islam and, you know, you're allowed to marry a six-year-old and, you know, this is way Muhammad wanted it. And, you know, I don't believe many moderate Muslims believe that in America. There's many fantastic, great American, you know, Muslims, and does not reflect the majority opinion at all. But there is this radical sect that believes that, you know, six-year-olds is the perfect, you know, balance in wives. And then you pray on the seventh day or something. I don't know. But it certainly isn't. Doesn't reflect Western values, that's for sure.
Well, what are the religious beliefs behind this in this country, the officials involved in this child trafficking and raping these kids as young as babies?
Yeah, I don't, you know, it just seems to follow this, there's a guy named Graham Fuller, CIA, is kind of a genius, actually. I'm not going to say evil genius, but he was the guy who kind of designed this whole takedown strategy of Russia through using the Mujahideen. And it was a good strategy. It did take down Russia, and it worked for 10 years. The problem is that after the fall of Russia in 1989, you know, kind of George Bush and the powers that be decided, hey, you know, let's create a new world order through using these guys as kind of our gang, like same way Rockefeller would use the Pinkertons. We'll use this, you know, radical Muslim element as kind of our gang for Wall Street, you know, kind of our Wall Street gang. And that's really been a continuation ever since. I mean, with a few twists. I mean, Hillary throws in the organ harvesting 10 years later in Kosovo, but that's the only real innovation that's occurred since then.
Okay. So all these people are blackmailed with sex. All our officials, they get them in these rings where they blackmail them with sex, and then they just do whatever they're told.
Yeah, and sometimes if they don't have anything on them, you know, their child gets run over in the street or something like that. You know, Al Gore's, I believe, son was hit outside a baseball game in Baltimore. And, you know, Joe Biden's wife was, you know, in a car accident and his son died. You know, if you don't play ball, you know, this is hardball. This isn't softball. You know, this is, there's a directorate. You know, I'm not saying it's one person, but there's a group of people in the intelligence community that play hardball.
Right, right, right. So what's Jeffrey Epstein up to these days? Do you know, hear anything?
Well, he's got his hearing coming up, I think, here in a couple of days for his New York case. He's got the one New York case and two Florida cases, so I don't know where that stands. I did hear that Victoria Roberts, and I don't know what her new married name is, I heard she was looking to publish the findings of the original, I'm not sure what the original court filing was, but Mike Chernovich, I believe, wanted to publish those findings. So
right.
That's the last I heard about it. I really haven't followed it since then.
Isn't it, didn't I hear that she wants to subpoena Trump for to take a deposition?
Yeah, I had heard that as well. You know, I know he went to a party in 1993 or maybe two parties in 1993, at a Jeff party, but I don't really know what has happened with the case since then. I think Alan Dershowitz is the defense on that, and I think they were in deliberations. And I don't know if it went to trial or not. To be honest, I have to look back into that.
Right. Well, his little black book tells a tale of everybody that's on his payroll. Well, it's not his blackmail payroll.
Yeah.
Well, George, I want to thank you for coming on. I mean, it is such a relief to have you on, and my God, we weren't interrupted at all. But I should tell people we're taping this early, and I didn't tell anybody on Facebook I was having you on today because I wanted this interview with you, George. You are doing the best investigation I've ever seen in my life as a journalist, I'll tell you.
Well, I do want to put out a shout-out to my researchers because I get all kinds of help from people on the Internet with search, and that really makes the series. It's not me. It's really all the researchers that help.
Right, right. Well, yes, give a big thanks though, to them, and me too. I'm so proud of your investigation and all the help you've gotten from all these people, and you got to keep going, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to another site. I'm going to one on Juan Brothers where the stepmother was held captive right now.
Okay. Okay, well, we will see you, George, and I will be watching your videos every day. Thank you so much for coming on.
Day by day, my life gets colder.